The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tiger videographer, filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. You can find me at cdunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. The Gabe Kuhn Baby Retrospective Part 2 is here. The big man himself is with me right now, live in studio. We're going to open talking about the Memphis Tigers football season, Penny, and Memphis hoops rolling, and then a few Grizzlies takes he's been waiting to fire off. Then we'll preview the Grizzlies' return to action tonight against the Golden State Warriors. Zach Edey versus Draymond Green, is it going to go down? Is John Morant going to play? We will discuss that after the retrospective. Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock, the Blitz, and then we will get out of here. As always, I'm joined by the Honorable King George, the Italian George, George Ruggiero, at KingGeorge94 on Twitter. George, how's it going, my friend?
I am very excited for the game tonight. I hope there's some fireworks.
I do, too. I really do hope that Draymond Green tries the demon we call Zach Edey, because we've already seen what happened when Jonas Valanciunas tried him, and it does feel like there's some bad blood there. Oh, and by the way, there's this guy there named Dennis Schroeder, too. It's going to be some fireworks tonight.
I forgot about that for a second.
I'm fired up. But I am very fired up for this as well. In studio, live with me, new father. You can find him on Twitter at G_Kuhn71, the host of this radio show, Gabe Kuhn. What's up, my friend?
How we doing, brother? And by the way, you say you're a former Memphis Tiger videographer. When was this, and with what teams? Or
all the teams. So when I transferred back from the University of Tennessee, it's the reason I came back to Memphis after my sophomore year. I needed an internship. I wanted to work in sports, film, radio, stuff like that. I came back, and it was Tubby was still the coach there. Okay. So it was like mostly basketball.
I was going to say mostly basketball, because I don't remember seeing you out there during fall camp when I was throwing up on the side.
No.
I don't remember that.
We were like the actual games. So
yes.
When I would be on the football field, I would be behind the end zone with a camera. And our job was to try to anticipate highlights.
Yeah.
So we would have to try to watch the game and figure out when something was going to break. And we would record like 30-second things, and then we would have to put like this. In real time, we would have to edit it and send it off so that they could do highlights. So for the basketball games, a lot of us were connected to the video board.
Sure.
So we would highlight it. We would say, this is a good one, send it off, and then they'd replay it real quick. So we did it for women's basketball, men's basketball, football, baseball, softball, men's and women's soccer. Volleyball was a big one that we did. So if there was a Memphis sport happening between the years of like 2015, 16, 17, you were probably going to see me.
Yeah, that was probably me in my long hair days. Have you ever seen pictures of that?
Gabe,
with the mop I used to have in the back?
We knew each other. Remember, I used to go to parties at your house on Spotswood.
I used to have the damn mop in the back, brother.
You don't have that right now.
Right now I do. I'm going to get it cut relatively soon, but this was down covering my name on the back of my jersey. This was real.
And I think the first time all the
white offensive linemen circa 2014 to 2016 grew out their hair like that at least once. That was the thing.
Listen, I grew up my hair in college too. I think that is a college thing. My hair was down to my shoulders when we were in college.
Massive thick beard, hair down the back.
See, I couldn't
That's
do the
what
beard
all the
yet.
White offensive linemen did at the University of Memphis, man.
I didn't have to be an old lineman to do that. I
hear you.
No, the beard came post-college for me. But no, the first time we met was at your house at a party.
Really?
On Spotswood.
Yeah. That would have been...
Austin Hall invited us because he went to
okay,
he
right,
went to carnival with all
right,
us.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like a huge...
That house... So get this. That house, we gave it off to some teammates. I'm not going to name names. But they took over the lease once we all got done. We had five guys in there. You could fit a bunch of people in there. You remember there's the upstairs with the pool table and everything. They had some big party about 3 months after we gave that house over to them. Everybody fell through that top floor to the bottom floor. So they had to do renovations on that. They kicked them out.
This was pre-Mobamba, too.
Yes.
This is pre-Mobamba.
They threw a big party there, and they fell through the second floor into the first floor living room, if you'll remember. I'm sure you remember.
It was impressive.
If you knew about that upstairs, you saw how unstable it was. Hell, the pool table was leaning.
When you play pool,
it was leaning.
It was basically like a putt-putt course because you were trying to like angle it.
Yes,
and
you had to play the curve. You had to play the curve like a putt. Yeah, you had to read the green. You really did. So I don't know why they packed all those people up there on that second floor balcony type deal, because you knew it was going to fall through if you had too many people up there. There was a weight limit.
Real man of genius.
Yes. Shout out to Austin Hall, though. He let me do this whole report on him, article on him in college for a journalism class.
Right.
So I did a huge interview with him. So shout out Austin. Hope he's doing well.
Great A human being.
Great football player.
Yes.
The dude
for sure.
Just found the football.
Yes.
He just had a knack for it. If the ball could be intercepted or picked up,
it was funny.
He was going to find
it. Obviously, he was a walk on, but he was a tweener, and you didn't really know what he was going to play. But they found that sort of star role that strong safety / linebacker role for him, where he's not in coverage
he would hit you too.
That was sort of his role, but that's a tweener in a defense. You have to really find a role for a guy like that, and they did.
Absolutely. Well, Gabe, yesterday, because it was Wednesday, we did Overreaction, Not an Overreaction. We did a special Memphis football edition, and we basically did a retrospective on the season. And I thought it would be a fun exercise for us to go through it, and I'm going to read off to you what my takes were, and I just want to know whether or not you agree or disagree, and then you get to fire off your takes. After that, we'll get into some Memphis basketball, specifically some quotes that Penny Hardaway had during his fantastic interview on Jason and John. Shout out Jason, shout out John. One of the better interviews I've heard in a very long time. Penny was very candid about things, and I think it is really important for Memphis Tiger fans to go listen to that. He is calling for people to be at that Mississippi State game.
Yep.
I hope you were there. This team is rolling right now. They deserve the support from the city. That was a big talking point during that interview, but I highly recommend people go and listen to that. But, Gabe Coombe, my first overreaction, not an overreaction last night, or yesterday during the show. Memphis football had a successful season, and I said, overreaction, but not by much.
Yes. Okay, I think that's fair. I'd say not an overreaction. If you can get to 11 wins, it's hard to win in college football. I know that you're not playing against good competition. You're playing in the AAC, and it's a bunch of dead bodies you're running out against there every single week. But you got a road win against a top 20 team in Tulane. You were able to go handle business against two Power 4 opponents this year. Florida State, I know, was terrible, but you were able to handle business on the road. Then you go to the neutral site in the bowl game, handle business against West
Virginia.
Still
a P4 school.
And then you had 11 wins. Like, in the end of the day, that is the second highest win total in school history. It is very hard to just chalk that up and say, oh, we throw that season out. That wasn't historic. That was nothing. You have to definitely call this a success to a certain extent. Now, you stop with that conversation is the fact they didn't get to the AAC championship. And I completely understand that. I am fully on board with that. But at the same time, you got to 11 wins, two Power 4 wins, handled a big win at the end of the year, beating Tulane on the road. I can't just sit here and chalk that up and throw it to the side and say that was not a success. It was a success, but did you reach your ultimate goals? No. I think it's fair what you're saying. Overreaction, but not by much.
Yeah.
That's fair to me.
Basically, my take was, it was a really good season for Memphis football, but when the season started, you and I sat in the studio and said, the bar for success for us is going to be making it to the American Championship game. It wasn't the college football playoff, and I've seen some people have the sentiment of, oh, well, if you've just beaten UTSA, you may have had a much.
Sure.
Like, I don't know. Boise, well, Boise would have probably been there.
But
anyway.
Like, think about the Big 12. You had Arizona State and Colorado.
You
would have
been in the conversation. You would have been in the conversation, which would have been an accomplishment in and of itself. But I don't think it was really a possibility for you to make it in this year.
If you would have won your conference.
You would have had to go undefeated.
If you would have won your conference with one loss to Navy, I could see, considering what the Big 12 was, I could see there being a conversation there.
A conversation. Maybe a conversation.
But because, like, Tulane was in the conversation.
Yeah.
And they had two losses
you,
at that
and
moment.
And you took care of business against Tulane.
Yeah, like, Tulane was still in the conversation. If they would have beat Memphis, then beat Army in the AAC title game, they could have maybe jumped up there and given somebody a run for their money. But, again, I think it was an outside conversation. But, well, still, it would have been there. It would have been there.
And to your point, It is a discussion of the different eras of Memphis football, and I understand where older fans are saying, listen, 11 wins in a football season is something that you should cherish and appreciate because it does not come easily. It is very hard to do, especially at the University of Memphis. Now, the flip side of that is we have now been doing this for a decade, over a decade of having this success of Memphis. This is now 5 straight bowl game wins, which is an accomplishment.
That's one thing that Ryan does do.
He wins those bowl games.
He's
going to win those bowl games. He's going to get you to a bowl game and win those bowl games. It's just the conversation of what constituted success for you this year. If it was winning a bowl game, having 11 wins, then great. If you want to call it a successful season, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. And that's where I've had a bit of an issue with people trying to tell other people how to feel about this season, because it is, wait for it, nuanced. And I know that's very difficult to do when you're talking about college athletics, but that's what it is. It's, you can have space and say, this was a really good season. If you want to call it successful, that's fine. But there is some disappointment in it because you didn't ultimately reach the American championship, which felt like the bar for success.
Here's the thing. To the older fans that say this, I'm not like bagging against you. I'm not going to say 11 wins is not a success, because it is. And you say, okay, well, winning football games at that type of level, winning 11 football games is not easy. Well, it's a lot easier in this conference, man. Like, think about the teams that were immediately behind, the team that was immediately behind Memphis in the American Athletic Conference standings. You know who that was? East Carolina at 7-5.
They're not a powerhouse? Is that what you're telling me?
South Florida, who lost their quarterback for some games, and Byron Brown, and he had a sophomore slump, and they weren't very good. Like, you just look at the teams that are immediately trailing you, and you realize this is just a cakewalk of a conference slate. And you lost two games in that conference slate. And I know what I can't shake. Considering how they ended the season, went to Tulane, handled business against a top 20 opponent. Then you go and handle business against West Virginia, even though that was a little bit of an adventure there at the end. Elijah Herring slide a little bit earlier, but I guess that the call still stands. We're fine there. But the thing that I can't shake the thought of is Memphis may have been the best team. They probably were the best team in the AAC all along, maybe one of the best teams, if not the best team in the Group of Five all along. They just didn't play like it week to week. That's the problem you run into. Peak Memphis, you probably put up there with Boise State. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's the truth of the matter. We saw the peak of Memphis and what their powers could be when they're playing the right way, when they're forcing turnovers, when they're all bought in. We saw that the last two games of the season. And I think we saw that down the stretch of the season last year. It's just frustrating they couldn't put it all together for an entire season. They had way too many weeks where they were just playing around with their food against inferior opponents, and it came back to bite them against Navy and certainly against UTSA.
Well, and you also had odd circumstances in your conference this year. I mean, you talked to Army's head coach, and he basically said, yeah, we had a cakewalk schedule. It was part of the deal of us coming to the American.
Yep.
If Memphis had the schedule that Army had,
they would have handled it
no problem.
Well,
it would have been a different We think they would have.
They did lose. Let's not lose sight of the fact they did lose to UTSA.
Yeah.
I can give Navy a pass. We saw what they did to Army in the Army-Navy game. Like, that team was good this year. They were much improved. But the UTSA loss, you know,
if
even if they had Army's schedule, there was probably still something looming out there.
It feels like that's the turning point.
One thing that became clear, and even in the bowl game you saw this with the Elijah Herring poke out and everything else, no single game was over until there were zeros on the clock. And that's sort of the microcosm that Elijah Herring poke out fumble in the West Virginia game. Microcosm of Ryan Silverfield's career.
Yeah.
always a close shave, always has to be interesting
well,
at the end.
Well, and the whole kick, no kick decision, that right. It did really feel like it was a microcosm of the Memphis football season in that game where it was ugly, it wasn't pretty.
You have a 35-17 lead.
Yeah, defense couldn't get it done when you really needed right. them to. They had the interception,
but
then they made a mistake.
Half,
yeah.
But then they struggled in the second
but
half.
I will say, Seth was incredible
yeah, was
in that
good.
Game. Seth was amazing.
You can tell
that
was a guy who knew he was playing his last game in Tiger uniform, wanted to show.
And that leads me to the topic number two. Seth Hennigan is the best Memphis quarterback of all time. I said overreaction, but he deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, because Mount Rushmore, well, I don't know.
Well, when Prime comes
in. Because Paxton goes up there.
He's one. Paxton was one. Riley
was two. Goes up there.
I had Seth three.
Brady goes up there just because of what he was able to accomplish. I don't think he was the most talented. I think he's the least talented of this run of four that
sure.
they had. And then we could have a conversation. In 11-win season probably puts you as that fourth head on the Mount Rushmore, if you will. But Danny Wimprine, you talk to a lot of older fans. They absolutely loved him and
what he was
to the program. And that was when the program did not have near the same talent or resources that they have right now.
Right.
So I think that he gets a little bit of a boost because of that, because of the ulterior sort of factors that came into his career. But I think I'd put him as that fourth on that Mount Rushmore. And when it comes to, you know, if he's the best of all time, no. No, that's an overreaction.
Yeah, he's not
that, but he was damn good. And it's a shame he wasn't able to win an American Athletic Conference championship. I think he said that leading up to the final weeks of the season. That will probably haunt him. I hope it doesn't haunt him too much. I hope he, you know, has a chance at the next level to stick with a team, and we'll see how all that works out. The pre-draft process is going to be big for him. But, you know, I think that is something that we'll look back and say, yeah, he's top 14 in passing touchdowns all time in college football. He's top 14 in passing yards all time in college football. He stayed at this place for 4 years, but you know what's missing?
The wins.
The damn championship and those extra couple of wins that you could have gotten that you feel like you should have had.
Yeah, like when you look down at first in passing yards, first in touchdowns, first in pass completions, but then you get to the record, 34-16.
Yeah.
If it was 40-10.
But 34-16 is like.
It's really good.
It really is good.
It's good.
It's a good record. But there's just notable omissions there of, did I make it to a championship? Did I win a championship? No. It just sort of leaves you trailing the three guys that came ahead of you.
Seth is the only FBS QB to start at one school all 4 years since 2021. Is he the last
probably
that we will
so.
Ever see do that?
Yeah. I will add this caveat, too. At the Group of Five level, I'm 100% positive he's the last. Or Group of Six level, probably pretty soon with the Pac-12. But he will be the last at this level. I am very confident in saying that. Is he going to be the last across the FBS, including Power Four sort of schools? I don't know.
I think if contracts come into play with NIL,
we'll
too,
see how
that
all
could
that
change
works.
It.
We'll see how all that works. Because
right.
you may get a guy who plays well enough at a school, but it's not like the big NFL draft prospect, so he sticks around for a few years. Like, you could get that at an Alabama or a Clemson or one of these big schools. But I think just if we're having this conversation, he is one of the last we will ever see across FBS football to stay for 4 years at the same place and start every game.
Because it's not just staying for 4 years. It's starting
yes.
as a freshman.
Yes.
He started every single football game. And that is why when I will think of Seth Hennigan's legacy, I will think of consistent, reliable play, but loyalty. Loyalty
yeah.
is the word that comes to mind for Seth Hennigan. And I do want to ask you, because he is a solid, patient quarterback. He is more of a pocket guy than you see around college football now and even in the NFL. Do you think he has a shot to be drafted?
What I will say, not drafted. I think what we're talking about with him, undrafted free agent, I think most likely, and this people aren't going to like what I have to say because they have a love affair with Seth Hennigan right now for good
as
reason.
As they should.
For
as
what
they should.
He was able to yeah. do in a Tiger uniform. I think he will get a solid invite to a rookie minicamp and have a chance to play himself onto a roster. That's what I think will happen. He'll get an opportunity. It's just not going to be the best opportunity in the world. And the reason I say that, not overly athletic, doesn't have the biggest arm, doesn't have the fastball that a lot of these guys have coming out of college. I just think the measurables and all of the intangible things are going to hold him back a tad bit. But One thing that will be his saving grace is the success he was able to have here at Memphis and the accuracy he has throwing the football most of the time. So I think that will give him an opportunity, at least a foot in the door. He's going to have to make something of it, though.
I will always remember Seth Hennigan very fondly, and I feel like one day in the future, Gabe, Myers is going to come to the two of us and say something about Seth, and we are going to respond with,
You have no idea
how good Seth Hennigan was! How dare you, Myers! Grounded! Yeah. In the corner. Do some burpees.
In the corner. Dang.
My third topic, though, and this is the ongoing conversation of the last 3 years of Memphis football. Ryan Silverfield is the long-term solution for Memphis. I said overreaction with the caveat of, we're going to find out next year. Because it's going to be a retooling year. Seth's not going to be there. You're losing some guys in the portal. You've gained some guys in the portal, though. Like, some are trying to pretend like there's been this mass exodus of Memphis, which is just not the case. They've also brought in a lot of guys.
They're fine
a center
right
from Harvard.
That's
a good guy to have at center. Yep. Somebody from Harvard.
Yes.
They got a couple skill position guys. But ultimately, the stabilizer of your program, Seth Hennigan, isn't going to be there. So how is it going to look?
To that sort of prompt, is he the long-term answer? For now, for two 10-win seasons in a row, an 11-win season this year, I'm going to say not an overreaction. And obviously, I think next year is going to tell us the story, because what is it going to be with life after Seth Hennigan? Retooling or rebuild? That is the real question. Because what happened with Seth Hennigan through this four-year period, let's not forget the first two were 6-6 seasons.
Right.
You bring in a new quarterback, you don't want to have two 6-6 seasons to start that off. You don't want to have this slow build. People want it right now. And if you have two 6-6 seasons, oh my gosh, imagine how loud it gets around the Memphis area. How many people call for his firing? You can't have that again. So you need to retool. I think he's doing a good job of that right now. They still have really good resources. I don't think he's fully maximized those resources, but he's on his way to doing that. They've got some good offensive linemen. They brought some guys from Kennesaw State over, which I thought was interesting. A really good offensive lineman who started a bunch of games, and a defensive lineman in Puda Walker, who was great and then did the redshirt rule through four games and redshirted so he could play elsewhere. So I think he is a decent long-term solution, but eventually you have to get to an American Athletic Conference championship game, and he's got to do that in the next couple of years. He's got to do that. But two 10-win seasons and then an 11-win season this year. I mean, you have to give it up to the guy. He has run a very solid program that has eked out a bunch of wins the past two seasons.
Yep.
We can't deny that. In the end of the day, the guy is 21-5. The last two seasons. There are not a lot of programs that are able to do that in a 2-year span. And
right.
and the programs that are able to do that are usually in the top 10 of the AP poll every single preseason. So that in itself, I think, gives him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to being the long-term solution here at the University of Memphis. We can be disappointed about certain things, but 21-5 in a 2-year span is just not to be ignored. You can't ignore that.
I want him to be the long-term solution. It's just prove it. You got to prove it. And I think it hasn't been proven 100% yet, but I agree with you. That record can't be ignored. I do think the hesitation is the bigger games and you drop in moments that you shouldn't have, like
sure.
UTSA. It's just there's always a but, and I wish there wasn't a but when you were talking about Ryan Silverfield in the last few seasons of Memphis football. You brought up an interesting point there, though. The quarterback position next year. Antoine Hill Jr. is going to be on campus, but Memphis has been tied to a few interesting names recently.
The interesting name being Matthew Sluka,
uh-huh.
UNLV, all the issues.
Is he a quitter, Gabe?
He didn't have any loyalty to UNLV. Why would he have loyalty to Memphis? Well, he's got one more year of eligibility, no more red shirts left. And guess what? The University of Memphis and their NIL department is a lot more stable than UNLV. Sorry, Brad Carson. Sorry to say that to you, our wonderful boss. But in the end of the day, Memphis's NIL department is a lot more it's understood what you're getting ahead of time. You're not going to get into a situation where you're promising this guy a whole bunch of $100,000 on the recruiting trail, and he's not getting that by the time he gets to campus. They have more than enough money to go pay him what they feel like he's owed. So if a Matthew Sluka came in, I'm fine with that. But I think that veteran quarterback option for the retooling of this roster instead of a rebuild is really a necessary step for Ryan Silverfield, and we'll see if he passes it and what he does with it.
My final prompt for you, and this is more of a fun conversation, because a lot of people, Mark Giannotto tweeted out after the West Virginia game, how unreal the quarterback run of Memphis has been. Paxton Lynch, Riley Ferguson, Brady White, Seth Hennigan. Probably the best four quarterback run in the country over the last decade. I made the argument that the running back one is even more impressive when you go and you look at it. And it's going to continue next year. The running backs for Memphis next year are going to be very, very good. You've got Tony Pollard, who's having a career season right now in the NFL. Darrell Henderson, who glides like glass. Antonio Gibson, Kenny Gainwell, Blake Watson, Brandon Thomas, who I was really happy to see Brandon got a touchdown in that bowl game. And then Mario Anderson Jr., who's one of the more underrated Memphis players we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah. All right. Let's add nuance to this, right?
Because I'm here for it.
I think this, if we're talking about NFL success and long-term success of player by player, without question, the running back run is the best one.
I don't really think NFL matters in this convo. It's a bonus.
I do want to say what's more impressive. What's more impressive is the quarterback run. You look at, 65-70% of the country, of 134 FBS teams, they struggle to find their quarterback. They struggle to find one guy, one freaking guy, to go handle business game after game after game. To be able to find four guys multiple years in a row, to be able to take that and run with it, and to be very successful at doing so, to be record setters, that is more impressive to me.
It's almost unheard of.
A quarterback who has to take in all of the lessons, know all the defenses, understand what everybody's doing on the field, on the offensive side of the ball, deliver the ball on time, accurately. Like, there's so much more that goes into the quarterback position. And to find four guys in a row, regardless of what they did at the next level, that were able to take that offense and push them over the top to be a top 20, top 25 type offense every single season, that's more impressive to me. But when we talk about the long-term success, the NFL success, of course it's running backs. The amount of talent they've gotten in that room over the years is unbelievable. But it's so hard. You can't discount the fact that finding four straight quarterbacks and not having to replace one of those guys in that run of four quarterbacks, that is hard as hell to do, even if you're at Alabama. Even if you're at Georgia, it's really hard. You see it constantly. There's been these revolving doors at a lot of these big programs of different quarterbacks. Memphis has found a guy and given him the keys, and they've run with it every single time.
Apologies to Patrick Taylor, by the way. I forgot to read him off in that list right there. But
and
he's
by the way,
included.
He's probably going to have to start. Did you see Isaac Garrido is now going to be out for the game this weekend?
Shocking. The 49ers have another injured player that happens to be in the skill position.
Well, at least we get to see Patrick run the ball behind that sort of zone scheme, that offensive line. That should be fun.
And he's going to hit somebody.
I feel like he could be really good in that role. I feel like he could be a 100-yard back. I mean, everybody who gets behind that offensive line and gets in a Kyle Shanahan offense runs for 100 yards. Jordan Mason, Isaac Garrido, obviously Christian McCaffrey. I mean, who else have they've had Jeff Wilson a couple of years. They've had so many guys. I think Patrick Taylor Jr. could be that next guy if they give him the opportunity.
I was telling George about it yesterday, but I'll never forget that Ole Miss game where an Ole Miss-like linebacker tried to meet Patrick Taylor in the middle, and he just destroyed him.
Well, I remember the first time I saw Patrick Taylor Jr. in person when he showed up as a freshman. First of all, did not look like a freshman. Just yoked out of his mind. Huge. 6'2", 210 pounds then. He's the same size. He had to, like, make sure he was not gaining too much weight, even though he came in as a freshman. Like, he was 210. They didn't want to put on too much weight because he was already the size he needed to be. But when I first saw him, I'm like, linebacker. That's gotta be a linebacker right there. Then he started running the ball, and he has good vision. I was like, how in the hell did they find this kid? How did he end up here? Because he genuinely looks like one of those big backs that Alabama or Georgia would sign every single season.
He was unbelievable in that game. Unreal in that game. Moving on, though, to Memphis basketball. Ugly, gritty win last night, but a win, and that's all that matters. Beat Virginia on the road. Virginia was 5-0 at home before Memphis went into that building to beat them, picked up another quad 2 victory. And when you look in the country right now, leaders in quad 1 and 2 wins as of 12-19. Memphis has 7 wins. The next closest, Oregon, Auburn, Alabama, Texas A&M, Marquette, OU with 5. What have you seen from Memphis basketball in this non-con schedule.
I see a team with a lot of resolve, a team that may have some rough nights at the office by the time we get to conference play. We saw that against Arkansas State. They're not like they could have a stinker one night when you have some foul trouble and you're only playing six or seven guys and you have to mount a comeback in the second half. Like, there are some nights where I feel like they could fall short. And I think that there will be a couple of games like that in conference. But what I see is a team that can respond and has resolve. After that Arkansas State loss, you respond by going to Clemson,
yep,
number 16 team in
huge
the country,
win,
handling business. In overtime, by the way, where you had a foul out, and like usually when you're on the road and you've held this lead this whole time and the home team comes back, has a couple of breaks bounce their way, you get to overtime, you get your ass kicked, usually. They handled business. They didn't blink. And then you go to Virginia, and they didn't blink there at all. Offense was nasty. That's how it is against Virginia. But they found a way in that second half to really lock down defensively. Virginia had no chance. They were uncomfortable. And then you see some of their players' comments after the game about the intensity that they were
bringing.
The
physicality.
And the full-court press. And it's just awesome to see. But this team has some resolve. This team is a lot more mentally tough than what we saw from the team a year ago. I think they're a lot more similar to the 2022 team than they are to the team last year. And, you know, they have a paint presence now with Dane Danger, who can go score at will, seemingly.
He's been
at
great.
The rim. Like, it's what gets me about him, he moves very quickly for his size, but he's also very cerebral about how he's going to get to the rim. You know what I mean? He moves with a sense of urgency, but there's a cerebral nature to how he uses his post moves. And I think that's something they've never had. And you can dump it down to him late in shot clocks and say, hey, go see what happens. And he's got that nice spin move where he gets, I mean, it's very
he's
quick.
Got great footwork.
He can get around the corner. He can get to the rim. That's fun to see. The guard play, good Lord, man. They just keep shooting the ball at a very high, efficient clip for the most part. I know there's been a couple of lulls. But P.J. Haggerty has been great. Tyrese Hunter, same thing. He's shooting, what, 51% from three, or at least he was 51% going into that.
He was before last night.
Before that Virginia game. And then you have Colby Rogers, who's been shooting really well. You just have guys you can rely upon, and then you have role players behind them that are not necessarily worried about their placement within the pecking order. It's just all coming together really well. And here's the thing we do need to pay attention to, because we're coming up on conference season. You're going to have Mississippi State, then Ole Miss, then you're going to start your conference season on the road against FAU. You're not going to have any quad one opportunities after this. So you had to be this team. You had to be the team that's tied with Auburn with quad one wins. You had to be the team that has the most quad one and quad two wins heading into conference play, because there's no one in conference that is worth their salt. You look at UAB. What was it last week? Earlier this week, they had a 25-point lead at halftime against Arkansas State. They gave that up. The last I checked, they were 244 in the net, and they were picked to win this conference in the preseason. It just shows you how far they've fallen and how there's nobody else sort of backing them up right now in this conference. You're going to have to really, and I hate this is how it is with metrics in college basketball, even with those seven quad one and quad two wins, and they have a chance to add on top of them, even with the five quad one wins, you're going to have to win a lot of these conference games running away.
Yeah.
15 or 20 points, or your metrics are just going to fall. It's just unfortunate. They will sort of, once they get into conference play, they're going to fall out of the collective mind for the most part, unless they just kill everybody.
Which they may.
Of the national picture. Like, a lot of the national sort of talking points will be about the SEC and the Big Ten and everybody else. They're not going to be talking about how well Memphis did in the out of conference. So you have to handle business as well as possible in conference. You can have a couple of losses. That's fine. But for the most part, you're going to have to put it on teams in conference night to night.
Yeah, because Memphis, Memphis has three quad 1A wins too. So it's the top half.
Yeah.
Of quad one, which is so important. I've seen some people be like, well, it's December, and it's like, yeah, have you seen Memphis's conference schedule? Yeah, it may be December right now, but it's a huge deal that they've done this.
I just hope the talking point by the time we get to committee time, I hope they still talk about the fact, because if you go look at strength of schedule in the out of conference, and
I think Memphis is two in the country.
I've seen them, and there's different metrics that measure it differently.
I'm gonna say the one that they have two.
I saw 11th. I've seen sixth. So basically nowhere do I see them outside of the top 15 when it comes to out-of-conference scheduling. I hope that really holds a whole bunch of weight by the time we get to committee time, and maybe we'll have a higher-rated Memphis team, a higher-seeded Memphis team than we've seen under Penny Hardaway ever. And I think It was Jeffrey was talking about it a little bit earlier. Gonzaga all those years would have a decent out-of-conference schedule, and then they'd get into conference, lose like two games. Usually when they lost like two games or less in conference, they'd get a five seed or higher. Hopefully Memphis can do that, but we'll see how it all looks by the time we get into conference play.
I think we've seen also Penny Hardaway just be excellent this year. Like, his halftime adjustments, mentioned it, against Virginia, were fantastic. And they did talk about how Memphis came out and established the tone of that second half. Physical defense. And Penny has talked about, he talked about it with Jason and John today, going out and finding guys who are high character, who match his system. George, do we have that audio ready of Penny Hardaway talking about high character guys?
Yes, sir.
All right, fire it up.
Well, I think the message to the fans would be this team has a care factor for the city. They want to make us proud. They want to make the city proud. And what a better way to show that, you know, that the city responds to that by coming out against a really good Mississippi State team. We played this non-conference schedule to give ourselves the best chance to get our higher seeding as we could get to get into the NCAA, because you guys know as well as I do, if you go into conference and lose one or two games, you're going to be an 8 or 9 seed. You play a good game the first round, and you play the number one overall seed in that region the second round. We don't want
that. That was the one about Mississippi State. We're looking for the one, the high character guys. Let me know when you get it, George.
I've got both right next to each other. Okay. My bad.
Fire up.
I'm listening. I'm like, this doesn't sound right. That's all me, guys. I have both next to each other.
Come on, George.
You know, you pulled
the sound. This is that Ole Miss fan coming out trying to sabotage Memphis.
No,
I see what's happening, George.
Don't do
How
me like
dare
that.
You pull, How you pull, dare
don't
you?
Don't do me
this
like
knife
that.
In
did
my
you
back?
Label
is this
the
yours?
Sounds, George?
He labeled them.
Is the knife
Come
in my
on.
Back? I did label them. What did I label?
You labeled them the right thing. You know what audition
play
does. Whether I click on it or not, sometimes it doesn't do it.
Play the sound, George.
Play the sound, George.
I think you find it out when they get here, but when you do your research on the character of the young man, I'm always just going after talent. I haven't done my research, like call 5 or 6 people and go, tell me about this young man. How he is as a person? Is he coachable? How is it when another teammate is doing well? Where is he mentally? Is he still going to play? We did that type of research this last year because I've seen it happen with the talent. And Coach Brown used to always say, talent gets you beaten. And, of course, we've gotten beaten with all the talent because the talent doesn't want to play together. So what happened was Tyrese Hunter was just a part of being a really high-character kid. Kobe and P.J. Haggerty knew each other extremely well. So they were going to be good friends. When I first got Tyrese Hunter, it was kind of like a little questionable because P.J. Haggerty wanted the ball, Tyrese Hunter wanted the ball. But I asked Tyrese, could you call P.J., build a relationship with he and Kobe? And when he said yes and they started talking on the phone, I knew that it was going to be perfect when they got here. And now they're all best friends. They go everywhere together. They're in the gym all the time. They root for one another. Even if Tyrese is as hot as he can be from 3-point line, he's still going to tell Kobe and PJ, you guys keep shooting, keep scoring, I'll be okay, and vice versa for all three guys. That's never, ever happened on my team. So to me, that breeds the confidence into the rest of the team. Like, we love each other. We care about each other. And we have a care factor about this city and this school. We just really want to ultimately win. And that's what you're seeing right now. It's way different from any team I've ever had.
I think it's really interesting to hear him talk about how this team this year actually plays together and they like each other, because it was the obvious thing, and it was the Achilles heel of that team last year. They didn't like each other. And when the going got tough, they all shut down. It turned into ISO basketball. They weren't playing together on defense. And I think the Larry Brown part of that was really interesting. Talent will lead to losses. You've
talent
got to have high character guys that want to play within your system. That's what Penny went out and found.
Well, sure. Yeah. I'm gonna take this a different direction.
Okay.
I guess better late than never, but seriously? You're just now calling people and checking the reference page? Come on, man. Like, I'm glad he did it. I'm glad he's, because it shows.
Sure.
The work shows. But this is year 6. You're supposed to, when you are about to hire someone and they give you a reference page, what do you do with that reference page? You call the people on the damn reference page. And if you don't, maybe you'll end up hiring the person. Then you finally call someone on the reference page. You're like, oh, they're the worst. They have the worst work ethic. They're all about themselves. Like, you know, I'm glad he's doing the groundwork, but this is groundwork that should have been done. Again, better late than never.
Sure.
I'm glad he's very upfront about it, but it does feel like he's learned a lesson. So that's the positive I'll take from that. But this is something, to me, when I heard that, it's like, yeah, I can tell you did that with this team just based on the play and how they're getting along. But this is something that needs to be done year over year over year. Listen, I'll insulate it a little bit for Penny Hardaway. I'll insulate it. Sometimes it's hard in this day and age because you're trying to turn over a roster. You don't have a whole lot of time, and you just see a name and talent, and you're like, oh, they did this there. Oh, they were SEC Sixth Man of the Year, Javon Quinterly.
Yeah, who are we talking about?
And you say, wait, we have $200,000 left over. Let's see if he wants that. We need a point guard. Come on. So sometimes time restrictions can keep you from really laying the groundwork, doing the groundwork. But this needs to be done year over year over year. And legendary college basketball coaches will tell you exactly the same thing. You have to check the references, call people, make sure that these guys are solid players, but also have the work ethic, have a good team mentality. I'm glad he's doing it now, but to me, it's just like you finally learned that this year. Dang, man.
Fair enough.
Dang.
Fair
it
enough.
Feels like that should have been part of the offseason docket every season.
Yes. I took this more of him comparing this team to last year's. Instead of him talking about his whole career,
I took it more of him talking about last.
Because we can agree that that 2022 team, high character guys.
Yes.
Like Kendrick Davis, having those guys.
Yes.
I think that was what he was referencing. That last year, because it was the first real, we're going to turn over the roster completely type of season, and he went after the talent.
We have to get bodies. So let me just get these guys in here.
It does seem like, though, and he talked about it after last season. He called it a debacle on Jason and John. It was a very candid interview from Penny Hardaway, which he is known to do. Also, go check him out on Zeebo and Tony's podcast. He's amazing on that one as well. But I took it as he took the lessons from last year and applied them to this team. Most notably, go find guys that are defensive-minded, that can play together, like each other, but also want to work for the city, about the city.
And then ask somebody about them. Ask former coaches. Ask somebody about them, too.
Like, that's fair.
Also, just like looking back at the Javon Quinterly one for an example.
Who?
Exactly. but you just go look back at that one, and his previous coach did not have glowing reviews.
No, he still took him in.
I think in the future, Penny Hardaway is being clear, things like that are not going to happen as frequently.
I will say, though, Penny, coaching-wise this year,
has been phenomenal. Yeah, he's been
really good. That defense has been 10 out of 10.
Yes, now, the one thing I'll say is I want him to start faster every single game.
Sure.
But his halftime adjustments, what he's been able to do to get that team to buy in, to come back in second halves and win games, has been impressive.
I think it's been really important, too, that you've seen guys this year, even if they're not scoring the basketball, they're still bought in defensively. They're still trying to move the ball. They're still crashing the boards. Like, you've had P.J. Haggerty save you in a few games. You've had Tyrese Hunter save you in a few games. But even when Tyrese hasn't had it, even when P.J. hasn't had it, even when Colby hasn't had it, they're still staying involved. And then Dane Danger, the rebounding factor with Dane Danger has been very surprising. I know you got to go. I do need, though.
I'm going to fire off my Grizzlies take.
I need some Grizzlies takes from you, because I know you've got some
just,
in the holster.
This is my one, just because I see all the trade stuff out there with Cam Johnson and everybody else. The realistic option, the option you should definitely explore the most, and it seems like this is the one they're actually exploring the most because of, you know, how much you have to pay him and what he does. DFS, Dorian Finney-Smith, is the more realistic option.
Ball knower.
And in the end of the day, you have to pay less. You're going to have to pay less on the back end with his contract. He knocks down a three at 45%. He's 45 for 100. He's taken 100 attempts this year.
Career high.
And the guy plays unreasonable defense. He's tall, 6'7", 6'8". I mean, it makes a lot more sense to me. It
NBA
makes a lot
player,
more sense
tall.
To me.
Shocking, I know.
Well, I'm saying he's like a jumbo wing.
No, I know.
That's helpful. And you could always use one of those, a 3-and-D jumbo wing. So, like, I just think that's the more realistic option. Everybody wants to, like, thinks Cam Johnson's this big splash because he's got 18 points per game and he knocks down a three at a high clip, but you're going to have to pay him more on the back end.
Yep.
It may cause a little bit more disruption. I think DFS can just fit into this lineup seamlessly, move on with your life.
I totally agree. I wouldn't hate Cam Johnson by any means.
But either way,
but
if they don't make a trade, I'm not going to be all that upset either.
I'm not going to be upset.
I think you need to consolidate, but at the same time, you know,
here's what I would say.
Don't make a move just to make a move, like I said last week.
I wouldn't be really upset about it. I do think it wouldn't be maximizing what this team could ultimately do.
That's fair. They're at the top of the West, 18-9 right now.
Yes, sir.
You want to maximize that. I get it.
Gabe, thank you so much for hanging out with
man.
Us. You'll be back January 6th.
Yes, I will.
He'll be back January 6th. We made that joke last week.
We don't have to do it again. We can just chuckle this time.
Yeah, we'll just chuckle this time. That was Gabe Kuhn, host of the Gabe Kuhn Show. You can find him on Twitter at @G_Kuhn71. When we come back, we got a preview of the Grizzlies and Golden State Warriors tonight. Edie versus Draymond Green, a jog and a play. We'll talk about it after the break. You're listening to Connor Dunning on The Gabe Coombs Show on 929 FM, ESPN.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Instagram. Welcome back to the Gabe Coon Show. This is Connor Dunning sitting in for Gabe Coon. Tonight, Memphis Grizzlies return to action. 7 o'clock, Golden State Grizzlies. The Edie versus Draymond Green showdown. And, George, I found some interesting stats about Zach Edie.
I'm very ready to hear this.
I'm going to present these. No opinion.
Okay.
I'm just going to tell you what the numbers say. And, people, you can take them how you want. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't have an opinion. I'm just putting them out there.
All right.
Zach Edie's first 15 games in the NBA. 11.3 points per game,
mm-hmm.
7.1 rebounds per game,
nice.
1 block per game, 61% from the field, about 20 minutes a game, 1.5 turnovers, 3.2 fouls, 22 years old.
Solid numbers. Not bad.
Really solid for Zach Edie.
Especially for the first 15 games, small sample size, but it's nice.
This is another big
okay.
in the NBA in his first 15 games. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet. I'm just going to read off the numbers, mm-hmm. and then I'll tell you who it is. I'm not saying he's going to be this guy. I'm just saying the numbers are similar. 9.4 points per game, 5.1 rebounds. So far, Zach Edey's winning. 1.3 blocks, got him there. 60% from the field. Edie got him by 1%. 19 minutes per game, 1.5 turnovers, 2.8 fouls, 22 years old. And this man is Yao Ming.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Hey.
Do numbers lie? What's the saying, numbers never lie?
That is a saying. That is one of them.
Listen, it would be insane to think that Zach Edey's going to walk in and actually be Yao Ming. Yao Ming's one of the most dominant bigs we've ever seen. If it wasn't for injury, he would have been an all-time great. It kind of arguably is still an all-time great.
Especially for the globalization of the game.
It just, I think, helps put him into perspective how good Zach Edey has actually been in his first 15 games. He's had some really high highs. He's had some low lows. But I think that we've started to see Zach Edey have some consistency. You know, before the injury, he really started stringing together a couple good games. He was really good against the Lakers. And tonight is going to be really interesting to see Zach Edey against the Golden State Warriors, because he's going to be going up against someone named Draymond Green, who has an issue with Zach Edey, has an issue with Taylor Jenkins, and seemingly has an issue with the Memphis Grizzlies, even though he almost took a contract with the Grizzlies a few years ago. But it is going to be curious to see tonight if Draymond Green tries to test Zach Edey. Is there going to be a fight? Is Dennis Schroeder going to get involved? There's a lot of intrigue with the game tonight. Right now, the Golden State Warriors aren't doing too hot. They're looking for a big win. They're looking to get back on track. You and I talked about it the other day when that Dennis Schroeder trade happened. When Steph Curry is not on the floor for them, they're pretty bad, and Podziemski has just not been able to get it done as the backup point guard. That's also not what his job is. He's not supposed to be a backup point guard for the Golden State Warriors, so that Schroeder trade is going to be very, very good for them. I expect the Golden State Warriors to get it together here moving forward, but tonight's going to be a good test for the Grizzlies. You want to pick up a big win against the Golden State Warriors. Right now, they are a 2.5-point favorite, and it looks like that John Morant is questionable for tonight's game. You had Eric Hasseltine on with Jeffrey Wright, and he said that if Ja can give it a go, he will, but it does sound like he is dealing with some back soreness. And Eric pointed out that coming up, the Grizzlies have a pretty tough stretch. So, you know, if you have to sit Ja Morant tonight, it is going to be disappointing, but you've got to get ready for this stretch coming up for the Memphis Grizzlies, because they have had a pretty good break. But you got Golden State tonight, you've got at Atlanta, then you have the Clippers, who have been really good when James Harden and Norm Powell are playing. Toronto's a scrappy younger team, but then you get a reprieve, you got just New Orleans, which is just basically a dead body right now. And there's been rumors that CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard might have a reunion in Milwaukee. That would be interesting to see. But then you got at Oklahoma City, at Phoenix, at Sacramento, at Golden State, Dallas, Houston, Minnesota, Houston, San Antonio, Minnesota. Yikes. Talk about a gauntlet. Remember, all year, Gabe and I have been telling y'all, it is really important for the Memphis Grizzlies to get off to a hot start, which, to their credit, they have absolutely done. Did they drop a few to a couple of teams that they shouldn't have? Yes. Did you have a debacle in the fourth quarter against Dallas? Yes. But ultimately, the Memphis Grizzlies are having a really good season right now. Health is the only thing that has been holding this team back. They have started to get it together. When the trio is out there, they are very difficult to beat. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but right now, effective field goal percentage in the fourth quarter, Jaren Jackson Jr. is number one in the NBA. Number one in the NBA. If you need a bucket in the fourth quarter, call Jaren Jackson Jr. I talked to DeMichael Cole about that the other day. He's become so reliable for this Memphis Grizzlies team. But tonight is going to be a challenge, especially if you don't have a guy like Ja Morant out there. You've got to be able to create. You need Desmond Bane to step up. You need Jaren Jackson Jr. to continue what he's done. If Scottie Pippen Jr. gets the run at the start, I trust him. He's going to play some pretty good defense on Steph Curry. Really, the key to the game tonight is shut down Steph Curry. Shut down Steph. And if the Warriors want to make this a physical basketball game, let them. I think the Grizzlies can match their physicality.
I certainly think that they can match it. They actually should be a more physical team. They can play a physical game. They can play a fast game. This Grizzlies team has shown you that they're a well-rounded group of players. They can win in multiple different ways. Like you said to start the segment off, one of the most interesting pieces of this to me is going to be the battle between Edie and Draymond Green, who, to your point, you know, I'm going to take it a step further. I don't think Draymond Green just has a problem with the Grizzlies and the Grizzlies players and coaching staff and front office and fan base. I just think he has a problem with everybody. Everybody else, it seems like the only person or only group that he doesn't speak badly about are the Warriors. Obviously for good reason, but anybody else.
Because, George, they followed the code.
Oh, they follow the code.
The code followers, yes.
You mean even when fouls and calls don't go their way, they don't go crying to the media?
Oh, wait, that happened last week!
Oh, wait a second. Oh,